You are listening to a jam-packed episode of the Punk News Podcast, episode number 426. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Big week this week, big week this week, big week this week. That kind of rhymes, or kind of, it's kind of she sells by the seashore kind of thing. Tongue twister, if you will. Anyways, on the Punk News Podcast, a lot happening this week. We got multiple people getting beaten up and thrown out of their own show. We've got people robbing houses. We've got documentaries. We've got tours that said they would never come back, coming back 8 months later. And we've got music festivals where you are not allowed in, depending on your chromosomal makeup. Smart move, or daring, or offensive. You decide. Anyways, welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm here with Contributing Editor Adam White, who, as he was saying before the podcast started, is losing his ability to discern parody from reality, which I think is exactly what Idiocracy is about.
Should I have seen that?
Yeah, it's real good. It's real good, but actually it might be less good now, because it's basically reality now.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. Everyone, when everything went started to go crazy, they were like, "Oh, we're living in Idiocracy." And then I'm like, "So I don't need to see Idiocracy now, because I don't want it to just be like, you know, just looking in a mirror. I can look in a mirror, but like on my own time, you know."
It's worth watching at least the opening 5 minutes, because that's a really cool like. It's a really cool intro, and just how they do it is worth taking a look at.
Fun fact, Upgrade the Pimp is actually Scarface of the Ghetto Boys, who was one of John's 5 recommended hip-hop albums, if you're not into hip-hop. Along those lines, I saw a funny tweet today, which I know it's terrible to like say, oh, I saw a funny, but it says, "I can't believe we have a president that has sex with porn stars and wants a space army, and I still hate him." Anyways, we are also here with news reviewer, interviewer, news editor, podcast participant, reviews writer, Tricky, and established poet and author laureate. We are here with Tricky Ricky Frankel, who just released his book, Get Me Out of Here.
It's called I'm Out of Here.
I'm Out of Here, in which Tricky Ricky interviews many bands, some of which you probably do know. Tricky Ricky, what's happening in your neck of the woods?
Mailing out a lot of packages today. Everything else is good. It's fire season's over, and it's finally cooling down out here, but I'm just happy to be back on the podcast.
And
Is fire a season now?
I consider like late August through like October fire season, because that's when they happen. So, and then if it rains a lot here, then it's mudslide season right after. Everything's cool. Things seem to be all right, and it's not raining that much here. So,
see, you're in the slight window between natural disasters.
If you want to call, I mean, natural disasters out here isn't like, I mean, it's not like, you know, giant hurricanes like hurling towards you and like, you know, the south. It's like,
no,
you know,
it's the fire.
Yeah, it's fire.
It's not wind. It's fire.
It's totally fire.
And then it's also earthquakes every once in a while.
Tell me, is he good to you like me? It is the time. Anyways, let's get right into it. We don't have a lot of time to waste, because we got a lot happening this week at Punk News. Let's jump right into the mailbag. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from David, who's written in before. David says, "I was listening to an old podcast where you guys briefly discussed Kiss. Tom is right and John is wrong. Kiss is awesome. John, please give some of these deep cuts a try. Flaming Youth, Do You Love Me, Charisma, 2000 Man, which is a Rolling Stones cover. The first two are co-written with Kim Fowley, the producer and co-writer for The Runaways, and that's from Dave. Dave, I've got the first 8 Kiss albums, probably, and I just think they're cheesy. I'm sorry, Dave. I know you got a good taste in music. You did an excellent... All you listeners should read Dave's extensive interview he did with Pansy Division. I'm almost sure he did the most extensive interview with Pansy Division ever. And it's a real good interview. That's at Punk News, and Dave did that. But, man, I mean, Kiss is just cheesy. I mean, they're just... They're all surface and no substance. And plus, they ripped off Alice Cooper, and they're just corny. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm not a fan. Not a fan. But if you are a fan... That's fine. I do like I Was Made for Loving You.
Here's the thing. Kiss is... That's exact... Yes, Kiss is all surface. That's what it is. I don't... There's not supposed to be... I mean, maybe Beth isn't. But I think they were pretty pivotal when I was a lot younger in finding just rock. They were one of my first big concerts. And it was super cheesy and fun. Like, it's cheesy, but, like, you know, endearing. And it's just, it's like a Vegas show, when you go see them. It's, they're fun.
A lot of my favorite bands love Kiss, Melvins, Integrity. I'm sure there's a lot more that I'm not thinking off the top of my head right now. I'm just not a fan. Adam, tiebreaker, Kiss, thumbs up, thumbs down. How many tongues?
Kiss is a cartoon band to me. So, No, Kiss. I say no.
All right. And this is from Steve. Steve just has a one-sentence email. What album were you most looking forward to, but it let you down the most? And that's from Steve.
Ooh. Like, ever?
I guess.
Or this year?
He doesn't qualify, so I got to say ever. Or you can say this year. Ever. Take it. Listen, have it your way, like you say Burger King.
Ever.
Well, I'll start. Go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah, you go ahead. Well, if we're talking ever, I mean, like, I was expecting better from, and I love Teenage Bottle Rocket, don't get me wrong, but I was expecting better from Ray Rocket's acoustic solo album, I remember. And I don't feel this way anymore about it, but Shapeshift With Me by Against Me, I was expecting better, but it's grown on me quite a bit. In the last year, especially, but the Ray Rocket one, I was like, I even bought it on vinyl. Like, I pre-ordered it. I was stoked on it, but it just didn't really do much for me. That's the one I'd probably go with.
The answer, and the only correct answer, is Rancid's Indestructible.
Hmm.
This is partly because as we were starting the show, I was reading the Wikipedia entry about the song Poison, which is from a much better record.
Is it on Rancid 5, Poison?
It was, but so there's this... Okay, I don't know why Poison was in my head. It was mostly because I really enjoy the start of that song where Tim just basically like starts the song by going, "Bah!" But
some people there is poison.
So the version of Poison that actually first showed up on a Punkorama comp sounds different than the version of Poison that was on, like, Rancid 5. And by different, I don't mean, like, oh, it was, like, a clear demo or something like that. I mean, like, they are otherwise identical, except that on the Rancid 5 version, it almost sounds like the song skips back and repeats a part of a lyric. It's really super infuriating. You probably can't notice it if that's the version that you've heard, but it's different than the one in the Punkorama comp. Mm. And according, and this is really making me happy that someone has pointed this out, according to the Wikipedia page for Rancid 5, there was a mastering error on the first versions of that record that came out that were later corrected.
Mm.
And I can't imagine that, a mastering error specifically on that song, and I've got to imagine that that is what they are referring to. And now I need to figure out if the correct version of the song is actually on versions of Rancid 5 that are circulating in the world. This has nothing to do with the question that we were asked, but because I was thinking about that, Indestructible is super was a super deflating balloon after Rancid 5.
You know, Adam, you may or may not remember this. We played an extremely rare Rancid 5 track on the podcast maybe 3 years ago now. Do you remember that?
Is that that track from, like, the 1930s where this lady sings, like, really lewd?
No, that was not Shave 'Em Dry by, what's her name? Shave 'Em, well, I'll think of that later. No, we played...
You used to play that song every three episodes.
Lucille Bogan, I'm bringing it back. I'm bringing it back.
No, you're not.
Yes,
no.
I am. With
if you want to listen to Lucille Bogan deep dive the podcast, and it's in there somewhere.
With Rancid 5, we played the alternate version of Radio Havana, which was only available on the promo CD single version.
So, but to get back to, I mean, that's a wonderful factoid, John. I'm not putting that down. But the reason why I think that's my answer to the question is that, like, there are certain bands where, you know, you follow them extensively. And Rancid was a band that in my youth and into my teens and early 20s and everything, like, I was really super into. And any of the criticisms that the world, like, rightfully had about them, all of the, you know, oh, they're just ripping off the Clash, all that kind of stuff, right? Just was like, it was just, it hit my shields and bounced away. Like, none of it affected me. I didn't care at all. And everything that they seemed to do, I was happier with. So, you know, of course I was a fan of Outcome the Wolves. Life Won't Wait, I thought was super interesting and super fun, and I had all the Slackers influence in it from Ruggiero being involved. Rancid 5, I was happy with everything on there. I was happy with them diverting away from the ska influence that I previously just said that I liked. Like, everything that they were doing seemed to work for me. And then Rancid 5, it felt like they looped back around, like the progression stopped and they started playing. Everything since there to me has sounded like a B-sides collection. Like, here's a random assortment of Rancid sounding songs from, you know, whatever era, and, you know, some of them are okay and some of them aren't, and It's all just a big samey pile from then on out. And that's been Rancid to me since fucking, I guess, what, 18 years now? Oh, my God. So, yeah, that record, that's my answer. I was disappointed and sad. I can't think of anything else that forced a band to drift away from me in that way. I don't want to say, like, the Refused revival record, but I mean like everyone, I thought Shape of Funk to Come was amazing, but I you know, I don't feel like I was clamoring for the Refused revival. So when it sort of, you know, landed with a splat that did not have the same, didn't have the same emotional effect on me.
What year did that new record come out? Was that 2016? Or is it wasn't it the same year as the Descendants record? I think it was 2016. I just remember like I was never really into Refuse, but like
as which Descendants record? As
Hypercaphium Spazzini.
Hypercaphium, yeah.
Oh, it might 2016. It might have been.
Regardless, I just remember that Refuse, you know, Renaissance, like, just deflating, like, a few months after the record came out. Like,
it was strange because they were one of the bands that was really at the top of everyone's list for, you know, a band that everyone in retrospect loved, but, you know, less people than were part of the fan base could claim to have seen them live. And if they were ever to reunite, it was a big deal. Like, I don't know who's that right now. Like, Fugazi, I guess, is the only one left.
Romance.
Yeah, Op Ivy ain't ever going to happen, though.
Why do you say that?
I don't, like, I feel that, like, that's, like if Op Ivy was to get back together, Commandos from the Future would appear to stop us from fucking up the timeline.
I would agree that I'd rather see a Fugazi reunion, even though I like Op Ivy better. Just because Op Ivy is so youthful, and, you know, I mean, they're all like 50 now, you know, we're getting to it. Whereas Fugazi, because they start that band once they had already matured to a degree, there's a certain agelessness to the music, you know? And also,
I have mentally declared that Operation Ivy is a band that cannot reunite. Like, it's not even within the realm of possibility for this discussion for some reason.
That's what everybody said about the Misfits, dude.
Hey, and we know for sure just Dead Kennedys aren't happening.
Ricky, do I have news for you?
Oh, for fuck.
No, so Ricky, what's your answer to our letter writer's question here? What's disappointing? Oh, no, you answered. John.
I said the Ray Rocket one.
Yeah. John, what's yours?
I'll spit out two. First Black Flag, first Black Flag album I got was Damaged, I think, and the second quote album I got was First 4 Years. And both those albums are 15 out of 10 records, especially First 4 Years. I mean, those albums are mind exploders. Next Black Flag album I got was Slip It In, which I thought for some reason was the one after Damaged, and it definitely isn't. And I thought Dez was on it, and it definitely isn't. And I was like so disappointed by it. I was like, oh man, this is not like Damaged at all. And it really bummed me out for a little while. I mean, that was like back kids these days won't understand this, but back then I only had like, I don't know, 30 CDs. So like you try to force yourself to like it, even though you don't like it because you don't have that many CDs. And so I forced myself to enjoy it, but I didn't love it. Then years later, I got the record and I played it again. And actually, it's way better. It really is a great record. It's not as good as Damaged the First 4 Years, but it really is a great record. And it came back around to me.
A side of Slip It In has some fucking great shit on it, though.
I think both sides. Well, the B side's got Rat's Eyes, or is that A side? Rat's
Eyes. That's the last song on side A. But no, man, like Black Coffee is basically like my life anthem. I mean, I know it's about heroin, but let's ignore that.
Slip It In is an extremely interesting record to talk about because, you know, Kira Rosler and some other women have said, well, that's a very misogynistic song. And maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, it could be. It's got that track Oblivion on the B side, which is like a really cool Black Sabbath style instrumental. For whatever mastering wise, that record sounds way better on vinyl than it does on CD. And it is a complex and what you would say divisive record, and that's kind of what makes it interesting. It is a good record. However, Ronette Park by Ceremony is still one of my favorite all time hardcore records. Maybe top 10 hardcore records.
I'm with you on that one.
Definitely top 20. And so then when they put out Zoo, it wasn't a letdown because it wasn't Ronette Park part two. Even though Ronette Park is a classic hardcore record, it's clear that there is sort of an artsy streak to Ceremony, which is what makes them rise above their contemporaries. But I wasn't disappointed they changed it up. And just that Zoo was good, but not great, and all the songs were about 90 seconds too long. It's like you got the idea of the song in the first 90 seconds, but then it went on for another 2.5 minutes, you know? So, like, all the songs are like 4.5 minutes long, and it's just like it only needs to be a 2 or 3 minute song. So that was disappointing. I don't know what's – I mean, it's been a while since Ceremony's last record, which, of course, was a very difficult record for them. And they've been playing shows here or there, so who knows – what Ceremony is going to do next. So I don't know. We'll see. Along those lines, Adam White, you had a Facebook thing that you wanted to talk about that I think is an interesting topic.
This is my
You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
Actually, letter writers, I want people to write in and engage with this discussion here, because this is something that I feel that like we the collective the scene, John, the fucking scene. This is what we need. No one can say the scene and not sound like a douchebag anymore. This is what we need to kind of grapple with right now. So, I mean, if you've seen the news in the past few days, it's like revelation after revelation that, you know, Facebook has either been horrendously ignorant or maliciously evasive about, you know, the amount of cascading privacy violations and like betrayals of user trust and all this that they've put out.
But anybody surprised? I mean, there's that statement: if you're not paying for it, you're not the consumer; you're the product. You know what I mean? So like,
there is one. I mean, you're right, but there is one thing that like Zuckerbot said like way back. He said we're not selling people's data and giving it to the Chinese or something like that. And that's like on tape. That's what's been happening though. So that just putting that out there. So there is. It's a bit of a mixed bag.
Yeah. Here's what I'm grappling with. Like if this was just me careening through life, then I could very easily say, you know, fuck this. I don't need to be on Facebook, and make it go away. Because whatever its original purpose was for me has since been served, right? Like I was in college at the right age that, you know, when the only people that they were letting onto Facebook were people with, you know, college, university email addresses or whatever. Like, yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Remember, Adam, you could only be friends with people at your university.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I was in it from that era, and that initial novelty of like, oh, you can reconnect with all the people who, you know, you went to school with and see what's going up. Like, that's been served. Any of those people that I've ever needed to connect with have been connected with. Like, there's none other that I have need to reach out or communicate with at all. Like that well has been tapped. I'm done. Good. So what's it worth right now? Like everything that it's worth, I can get elsewhere on the internet. You know, is it going to have, you know, pithy conversations with someone? Is it for organizing something? Is it for sharing photos or whatever? Like, fuck, I can do all that stuff elsewhere. So it doesn't serve a purpose that I need personally on a day-to-day level. So if it was just me, I could easily be one of those people that is going to, and I understand the irony in this, you know, go on to Facebook or go on to Twitter, sorry, and make a big self-righteous post about how they deleted their Facebook page forever and then just do it. And that's great. But that's not me, because I've chosen to live in this world where I want to be connected to the arts. I want to be connected to music. I want to do something that is going to connect with musicians and fans of music in whichever way I choose to do that. And right now that's my Sum Party newsletter, but there's, you know, future things that I might do. So if I start promoting more shows, well, you know, the place that everyone seems to be promoting shows is Facebook events. If I, you know, decide that I want to go do a label, it would feel foolish to not have a Facebook presence for that, given that that's one of the ways that people seem to be interacting with everything. You know, if I, you know, whatever else I do outside of my little individual thing, it feels like it's going to be tough to gain it traction without having Facebook in the mix, just as a promotional vehicle. I'm somewhat trying to experiment with not doing this, even with what I'm doing at the moment. So, like, for example, like some parties, like, very purposefully meant to be a personal project. So, like, it doesn't have its own Twitter account. It doesn't have its own Facebook account or a Facebook page or anything like that. Like, everything I do from it is just from my own personal, you know, accounting. And that's partly because, like, I did not want to get in the situation where I went and created a fucking band that I had with them. But regardless, I felt that I was to do something more, to do something where, you know, there's real money on the line. I've got to get people to this show. I've got to get people to buy this record. Then, yeah, you're kind of stuck using Facebook for it. And that sucks. And then I was just thinking about how, like, so outside of my hypotheticals, I've got to imagine that this is the feeling that a lot of bands must have. Because Facebook is just sort of like a shitty place to have to operate. I can't imagine that, you know, bands that are maintaining those pages are all that thrilled about having to continue to do it. They're seeing the same shit in the news that we're seeing right now about how, you know, horrible and how much of a betrayal of the trust of the users have come out of this company. But, you know, if you were say Teenage Bottle Rocket, well, deleting your Facebook page and getting off that platform completely, that might have like a real financial implication for you. It might mean that people don't know that you're coming to town to play a show. Like, it might mean that they don't know about a song that you put out, and all of a sudden you are you know, you're taking what little revenue stream you have and you're potentially, you know, kneecapping it for the sake of getting rid of Facebook. And just that is so defeating to me. Like, that sucks. Like, this is the world that we're stuck in. And that is not the promise of the internet that I entered into my like working life thinking about. Like, the internet was supposed to be like, it's this free and open thing. Anyone could get on there and promote everything. And, you know, you could do whatever you want. And you could, I keep thinking about that old, you know, that old Maximum Rock and Roll publication. You know, you can book your own fucking life, right? Like, you don't need all the big resources of a big label or a big PR team or anything like that. Like, you could do it with like all this cool underground DIY communications online. And I mean, like, you could, but we all decided that like Facebook was sort of the means to do that, and now that's where everyone is. So what do we do? Like, what do I do?
I'll tell you what we do. I don't know why everyone's like, oh, they abused my trust. I never trusted them to begin with. I don't know why people put apps on their phone which lets the app track where people go, who you're calling, this and that. I don't know why people, for the sake of me, I don't know why people check in on Facebook. Like, oh, I'm at the dentist, or oh, I'm at the grocery store. Like, that's so insane. There were horror novels written in the 50s and 60s and 40s about that exact thing. Like, they're going to track you wherever you go. And now people are like, they're tracking me wherever I go. This is great. You know what I mean? There's that thing where kids have now where like, it tracks them all the time, and they can see if they're like in the same block as each other or whatever. It's like messed up, man. And so I encourage putting as minimal information on Facebook that you would, you know, that you can, basically what you put in the phone book, I guess. However, it's not quite that simple, because even though you don't have the app on your phone, you know, it, like, if you leave Facebook open and like you open up another web page, I mean, Adam, you know more about this than I do. It really is easy for Facebook to snatch data from you that you don't want to snatch, even without you like installing anything and that kind of a thing. That's correct, isn't it, Adam?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, so there's that one part of it where if you're logged into Facebook and you're moving around other ways on the web, and those websites have Facebook plugins, they are aware that you're there. Just like a little tech tip to the world is that if you are using Firefox, there is a Firefox plugin that basically, whenever you go to Facebook, it sandboxes Facebook into a tab that, So basically you are only logged into Facebook when you were on Facebook, and it logs it out everywhere else. It's nice. But the other parts of this are like, you know, they do things like they build shadow profiles of you, where if you're even not directly interacting with them, they can kind of glean enough about you to sort of build a profile and this and that, right? But I mean, there's one thing about like we're saying, okay, you know, like if you're going to go participate in all of these obviously invasive behaviors, then you can't complain when all of a sudden you realize that you've been participating in all these obviously invasive behaviors. That's a little bit of, you know, you've made your own bed, you have to sleep in it. Like, I understand that, and I understand, hey, if you're some public influencer lunatic and you want people to be able to track every time you go to the bathroom, then hey, whatever, that's your prerogative, right? I'm less worried about that, and more just that they've made themselves so intrinsic to the music world that if you just wanted to just throw up your arms and say, you know what, fuck it, I'm not going there anymore, well, then you're probably harming yourself. And I guess that's what bothers me. Like, I had a professor in university, like the most like granola communist that I've ever met, and she had decided at whatever point that the crimes of the Shell Corporation against, you know, tribal areas in Africa were sort of the line that she could not, you know, she could not justify doing anything that would provide 1 cent of money to the Shell Corporation. And that meant like she went elsewhere in town to get her gas than the Shell station.
That, well, I do that all the time.
Right? But but you can, right? There's a thing. Like, let's say, again, if you're a teenage Bottle Rocket and you decide you have a tour to promote, I mean, you can go, you know what? Fuck you, Facebook. We're not going on there. We're just going to put this on our website. But, you know, when half the people show up, then you're really going to, you're going to suffer for that, right? And I guess, like, that is the part of this that's despairing me, is that, like, we have to remake the tools elsewhere. Like, we have to remake these lines of communications in a place that hasn't been bastardized, because we can't just opt away if you have something to promote. Like, if you are involved in the arts, I guess is what I'm really getting at there. If you're just like, if you're my mom, you have no fucking reason to be on Facebook. Just delete it.
So I wanted to answer the general question here. I think, Adam, I agree with you. I wouldn't, if it wasn't for, you know, the punk news stuff and bands posting constantly on there just to keep up with the arts, I wouldn't be on Facebook. Just wouldn't happen. Because I don't care what people in middle school are doing right now. I don't. But I think there are two possibilities here. I think people are growing. It's now, I mean, when you have Facebook having to, like, testify to Congress about these issues, that means these stories have become more than mainstream and that everyone knows. And at some point, there's going to be a breaking point where people just start leaving. And I'm pretty sure new accounts on Facebook have begun to plateau. So hopefully at some point this thing just, Facebook implodes on itself and becomes kind of like the next MySpace. That's one possibility. The other thing is, in terms of getting, you know, bands off, in terms of just getting the whole scene off Facebook, I think it might also be a generational thing. You know, teenagers now, you know, I'm talking teenagers like high school, middle school, they're not going on Facebook. You know, Facebook has been invaded by the boomers and have made it lame for the last few years. And what they're going on is like TikTok. I think they're just going like this. I mean, if Snapchat is even still thriving, Snapchat and maybe even Instagram too. But it's going to be a challenge for a while. But I think at some point, generationally, this will kind of fade away. It'll take a while. But yeah, I think that's where it's headed. I don't see it being here permanently for a while. And also, I agree. I think at some point, you know, I also remember, like, the internet was very, very democratized back then. Now it's kind of owned by Facebook, Google, Twitter, and maybe a few other companies. I mean, they kind of dominate it now. And back in the day, it was actually a lot more, you had to go to a website to see what was going on with a certain band or a certain thing or a certain venue that was putting on a show. So I think at some point we will see an implosion and eventually an exodus just from Facebook. This can't last. I don't care how big their stock price is. They're pissing off people, and the kids just aren't going on it. I mean, Generation Z and you know, beyond are just not. I'm not going on it. And Mark Zuckerbot is not making things better.
And anytime anyone says Generation Z, I think about that NoFX song. What I would love, and this is my computer science talk, is my dream in the world is that we make these things that have become indispensable into a protocol, which is to say, we create like a public standard that is, you know, it's fucking registered with the ISO about here's how this communications works, and then everyone can, in a decentralized way, feed into that, which is to say, bands could post their tour dates or their updates into this protocol, and that protocol would then allow that information to be disseminated to the people that have chosen to see it, but there's not one company that is lording over it. And that is not a pipe dream, because that exists for other types of communication where it's called email. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should be using email. What I'm saying is that email operates on that way. It's a protocol. The way that you send email from X to Y is written down in a set of standards. And if you want to implement that, you make a computer program that does that does the standard, and then it can talk to everyone else that also does the standard. That's why there is not one company that controls email. Right. For to use email, you don't have to go to one place and do one thing. Something like Twitter, right? Twitter controls and runs Twitter. It's not a decentralized thing. That's not what they chose to build. Right. Facebook is Facebook. It's this giant hydra of shit that's all connected together. That is that. So like, it is technically possible to go into to have that thing out there, but I mean, there are so many barriers to making something like that happen. The major part of it is just traction and adoption amongst people that, you know, it's a fun thing. It's a fun thing for me to say, but it ain't gonna fucking happen. But
the major part of that, Adam, is that all those companies you mentioned have extraordinarily powerful PACs or fund powerful PACs, and so you're gonna have a trouble getting congressmen and senators to vote against their own self interest.
Really, like, the greatest thing that could have happened to our generation would have been that if at a certain point, what's his name, Jack Dorsey or something, in like, let's say 2009, would have went, you know what, Twitter is a, well, actually, when did Ferguson happen? When was that? That was later.
It was like 2014.
Okay, so sometime between Ferguson and the popular revolution in Iran, I think, and then maybe what was it, like the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, like sometime between those three aspects where social media had like a major transformative effect on the public dialogue and on social policy and on people organizing and getting together about a cause. At some point between those three things, if he would have had his come to Jesus moment where he would have said, you know what, this thing that I've created that is actually connecting people, we need to give it to the people. Right. And he shaves a million off the top, puts it in his pocket, and then just like hands the device over to the fucking, you know, to the water department to run, right? Like as a public utility. Then we wouldn't be in this situation that we're in, but here we are.
You just need to let these things implode. I think that's what's happening. Eventually, I mean, I don't think Facebook will be around in 50 years. I just don't see it. I mean, back, way, way back, like Sears was the biggest store in America. Now no one knows what's now. No one goes to Sears. So it's a long time.
But, right,
it's a long time, but still, like,
I guess, like, there's an aspect of there's a certain point where you as an individual, so you as the arts maker, the arts consumer, will have to make the decision that, you know, this is the point where I can safely detach from this rotten entity and not handicap my own participation in the art scene, you know, in a way that you won't be able to make up in one way or another. So yeah, I don't know if I'm there yet, but like, man, all this week with all this news that's been coming out, I keep rolling it around in my head. I'm like, if I just deleted Facebook, like, what would that fuck up? Like, am I gonna like then turn around in like March and go, I'm putting out a record, and then I'm like, who do I tell? Like, people on Twitter, I guess, or what? Right? Like, am I really severely hampering my ability to make the next thing that I'm going to make successful if I get off that platform? And is that fear just what's keeping me on that platform and it's unfounded? That is what I'm grappling with. So what we're asking you, the Punk Who's Podcast listener, is solve this problem for not for me, but for humanity.
For the children. Do it for the children.
For the children.
Speaking of the children, children, Ricky, play the song.
Oh, sure. Hang on a second. Let me find the thing. So we premiered this whole album, believe it or not long ago. Brogues, featuring members of Morning Glory, Sean Gardner, and other people, have they released a second record and it's called Metropolitan Blues. They self-released it. The other member from Morning Glory is Early Gates. It's a really good melodic punk record. 14 tracks, and it flows really, really well. Lots of the more anthemic stuff that you might kind of, I guess, rubbed off on them from Morning Glory. A little bit more poppy, though. This is a cool album. So I'm going to play the title track. Again, it's called Metropolitan Blues by Brogues. Here it is.
And that was Metropolitan Blues by Brogues. Speaking of Brogues, Warped Tour is coming back. In 2018, Kevin Lyman says, "That's it, folks. Warped Tour as a touring entity is done." And as we all suspected, in 2019, he's like, "Warped Tour is coming back. It's not going to be a touring entity. It'll most likely be a destination event where there's going to be 5 or 6 or 7 or however many Warped Tours across the United States." So it won't be day after day after day. It'll be more like Punk and Trublick was, or even Riot Fest, or even Punk Rock Bowling, that kind of a thing. That'll be Warped Tour.
Or it sounds like It's Not Dead Fest, to be honest.
Is that in like multiple areas or something?
No, it's just in San Bernardino, but that's also Kevin Lyman's thing.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, but I think Warped Tour is going to be at least in 1, 2, 3, 4 areas. So there's going to be at least 4 different locations for Warped Tour in 2019. Is anybody surprised? Does Warped Tour matter to us in 2019? Does Warped Tour matter to anybody in 2019? And why do you think Kevin Lyman chose to make it 3 or 4 dates instead of, 30 or 40?
I interviewed him not long ago. I think it seems like it's a lot more important to people kind of more older than me. It never really mattered that much to me. It was cool to see the lineups and stuff like that, but I've never gone. I don't know. I think he did tell me that that just the paperwork alone to be able to play in each city is insane. And I'm sure that, the traveling is probably tough. After however, like 25 years now or 20 years.
20.
So I'm sure, I'm sorry.
20 years.
Yeah. 20 years. So, I mean, they probably, my guess is they probably picked the most profitable places and, said, "We're going to do these only to cut back on costs and and just a ton of paperwork." And that's what they're going to do. But I'm curious to see who's going to play. Cause the last couple, they featured some pretty, OG Warped Tour bands, if I'm not mistaken.
I feel like this is not a decision that they made all of a sudden, that whatever this is was part of the plan. And I feel like they botched the messaging of it. So by by making all that noise about how this last Warped Tour was the last, and that Warped Tour was done, and then, you know, 4 months later, announcing that, hey, Warped Tour is back, sort of, for next year. It makes it sound cheap. Like, it makes it sound like they didn't commit, or they were trying to toy with some emotion or something like that. Like, there is a way that they could have left people hanging in a way that put a cap in the past tour while leaving a little bit of mystique about what was going to come next, right? So go and announce that, you know, all right, the 2018 Warped Tour is going to be the last cross-country Warped Tour ever. And then you end that tour by announcing, like, immediately, you know, Warped is dead. Warped will be back in 2019 or something, right? And you leave everyone with this, like, cryptic, like, huh? Like, what does that mean? What's going on, right? And then you let the details of that thing trickle out, where clearly it's part of a plan, but everyone is in that there is a plan, that there is some iteration of this that is to come. This just, like, everyone's reaction was like fuck, it can't even die. it can't stay dead. Like, the first comment on Punk News is something like, what is it here, you know, next time I recommend a stake through the heart. Right? And it's like, yeah, like, you didn't leave long enough for people to get nostalgic about it, because you didn't leave any longer than you would have left in between any other normal year. And I, you know, I can't imagine that they genuinely were done. And then Kevin Lyman was, you know, sitting around at home, you know, throwing a tennis ball at the wall. He had nothing to do. And he's just like, fuck it, I'm bringing back the Warped Tour. Like, you know, that's not what happened, right? Like, there was a plan and a strategy about this. You know, you don't make things of this size, even if it does just become a festival or whatever, you don't make things of that size happen without, you know, year on year planning. So, you know, this, it feels like botched messaging to me. Am I excited about this? No, not really at this point. I'm curious to see what they do with it. I imagine that they may see a bit of an uptick in the quality of what they're putting together, if only because, you know, having to fill a cross-country touring roster is
daunting.
And I'm not going to claim that I know anything about how hard this is, but it seems really fucking hard. So you probably have to make a lot of compromises about what you're pulling in. And if you're just organizing, you know, a 1 or 2 day thing, you have a little bit more leeway. So, hey, we'll see. I just feel that like they set themselves up to be mocked.
Yeah, I agree. However, I think I agree the message is botched. But I think Kevin Lyman, I mean, I don't know him personally, but I think I give Kevin Lyman a lot of props. For 2 years ago, he tried to do old school punk rock and nobody went. So he's like, well, I'll just give the people what they want then. And he did, you know, like, you know, mainstream, not even punk. It's just like mainstream alt pop, I guess is what you would call it.
Screamo.
I don't even think there's that many screamo bands. I think it's just kind of like it's a scene that we're not even really aware of, to tell you the truth. So, however, I don't think it matters. I mean, at this point, Warped Tour basically sells itself, I think, and eventually kids are going to stop going just because it's been around for so long. But right now, the age of the kids basically stays the same. So Kevin Lyman doesn't need to project a message or not, because most of the people going to this kind of thing, they're not aware of any of it. I mean, like, if you go see, I'm trying to think of an example. If you go see Leftover Crack, Leftover Crack has two main guys, Sturgeon and Brad Logan. If you talk to people with Leftover Crack tattoos, Leftover Crack back patches, what percentage of them do you think know who Brad Logan is? It's like 20%. And he's like one of the main guys. So people that – and Leftover Crack isn't even as big as Warped Tour, not even close. The bigger things get, the less aware of the actual details people are. So it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter to Kevin Lyman. He's going to put it on. It's strictly a financial decision. I don't blame him. He's crunched the numbers. So it doesn't really matter what message he projects. A certain amount of people are going to show up, and he's going to get a certain bottom line. And I don't blame him. I'm just saying is I don't really think he's concerned with marketing or even strategizing how to present it. I think at this point he's putting out a product like rice or milk, and this is what's going to sell, and that's how much money he can make. Speaking of things that people have turned over time and time again, there's going to be a new miniseries about punk rock. It's going to star Iggy Pop, and Iggy's going to interview iconic punk rockers including Marky Ramone, John Lydon, Jello Biafra, Debbie Harry, Wayne Kramer, and Chris Stein of Blondie. Other people that won't be interviewed by Iggy but will appear on it are Flea, Danny Fields, Legs McNeil, Duff McKagan, Penelope Spheres, and of course, Dave Grohl.
Of course.
And so it appears no one knows exactly what's going to be what the exact angle it's going to be, but it's going to be punk, and it appears it's going to be a mix history slash importance of punk and mix Iggy interviewing other punk rockers. One important thing here is Iggy has kind of always distanced himself from punk rock. Not that he didn't like it, but I feel as though he thought it was limiting, and he never wanted to be considered a punk. He wanted to be considered just rock and roll, if you will. And so it's interesting to see Iggy, I guess, be... I mean, of course, Iggy certainly is the godfather of punk, but he's never seemed easy or willing to accept the mantle, if you will. He always seems to feel, I think, that he's doesn't want to get nailed down to any one thing or what he perceives it to be, because his perspective of punk is probably actually different than ours. But of course, he's been doing a lot of documentaries lately. Maybe it's a quick buck. Maybe he really cares. I don't know. The other question, and I'll throw this out to you two, a lot of people have this criticism, and I do myself. I love punk rock. Punk rock rules. The history of punk rock is very important. But at this point, haven't we mined the history of punk rock for pretty much what we're going to get out of it? Is there really that much more to discover, at least at a high level? I mean, like, there's probably more to discover about, you know, Flux of Pink Indians or Chumbawamba or, you know, the New York – well, not the New York Dolls. I mean, they've been done to death. The Avengers. There's probably more to discover in a documentary about that one microcosm. But at a broad level view, is there anything left to talk about punk rock at this point?
Well, what I'm interested – well, first of all, I actually just watched the Turn It Around documentary over the weekend, and he narrates it. It was great. The whole thing was great, and he did a really good job of narrating. His voice is kind of it was perfect for the way they did it.
Don't you think it was kind of weird they picked him to do – like, what does Iggy have to do with the East Bay? I think Iggy's the greatest. But, I mean, like, what does he have to do with the East Bay punk? I never – it seemed kind of arbitrary to me. You know,
That's what I thought too. And before I started watching, I'm like, why is he doing this? And then, like, I don't know, just the cadence of his voice, I thought really worked well as a narrator. To be honest, I didn't think, and after that, I really didn't think much more of it. I didn't see the connection either. So I agree. What I'm hoping for with this, and I am definitely interested in this, is that because he's someone that even though he's considered the godfather of punk rock. And he tries to distance himself from it. I'm hoping we get genuine. I mean, and I don't know what the possibilities are of this, but what I'm hoping for is that we get genuine questions from his point of view to ask these musicians. I think if it's from his point of view, I think it could be really, really interesting. Just stuff that he's curious about, you know. Otherwise, I hope it's not just like a, how did you know this was like a big thing? How did, you know, when did you put this record out? Or like the typical stuff, I think it could fall flat. But I'm willing to give this a shot for sure. I mean, Iggy, I mean, most of these people kind of like idolize him. So that'll be an interesting dynamic as well.
Flea!
Also, yeah,
he was in fear, Adam. He was in fear.
I know, is it fear, John? We've been over Flea.
I have one quick question, though. Why Dave Grohl is in everything, documentary, music documentary-wise, drives me fucking crazy. He's not the king of current rock, okay? He was in the Descendants documentary for some reason. Why? I mean, I brought this up before. Sound City was a good documentary about halfway. Then he gets all self involved and as if he's the savior of rock and roll, and it is so annoying.
Ricky, Dave Grohl, savior of rock and roll or unintentional murder of rock and roll?
Oh, just the corny dad of rock and roll.
I'm gonna give Dave Grohl a little bit of a pass here because, let's say you're Dave Grohl, you were definitely you were a part of an aspect of this scene. No one's gonna take that away from you,
right?
You are a genuine, just sort of like nice guy moving through the world. And you don't feel so precious about yourself that you're going to say no to things. And I think that like part of it is I don't think it's Dave Grohl wandering around like throwing his ego at these projects. I mean, I'm sure that's an aspect of it. I think a lot of it is that, you know, John, if you were going to be like, you know, oh, I'm going to make a documentary about, you know, Richard Hell and the Voidoids. And you called up Dave Grohl and you were like, you want to be in this documentary? He'd be like, sure. Right. I think it's more that he says yes than he's the one inserting himself into them. But who knows?
Watch his documentary Sound City and then get back to me.
I have not. So I don't want to.
And then at the same time, why is he in the Descendants documentary? Why is he there?
Because I
don't know.
Guy. He's a famous guy. Anyways. I'm down for this series. I mean, I don't know if necessarily that punk needs to be revisited in. The importance of punk, let's say, needs to be revisited in the form of, let's say a tell-all book or anything like that, because there's been a bunch of those. But, you know, multi-part television documentary feels like a little bit of a new ground. At least it's not something I tend to run into day to day. So I'm okay. I'm down to watch a well produced, you know, series of stuff about punk rock. I'm down for hearing Iggy narrate anything because he's gonna sound like an old sailor, and that's great.
That's basically what Turn It Around was.
I just want to see Iggy interviewing people. That's what I want to see. I don't care about the history of punk rock. In the context of this document, I don't care about the history of punk rock. I just want to see Iggy talking to people, and I'm sure that would be an interesting conversation. Speaking of an interesting conversation, there's a new ska band. They're called the Donald Trumpets, and they are a third wave ska band.
Hold on. Wait, John.
What? You there?
Well, John, your audio delayed as I was trying to make you stop, and you just kept talking. It was very strange.
Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw this in. I would be amazing if every one of these interviews was like the Iggy Pop Tom Waits scene from Coffee and Cigarettes.
Well, there you go.
Have you seen this? Are you aware of this?
I haven't seen. Honestly, I should.
It was like a 1993 movie, black and white, just a series of like odd conversations between people. It was like a Jim Jarmusch film. And there's this scene in it where Iggy Pop and Tom Waits sit down at a diner, and Iggy is like over enthusiastic and nervously asking Tom to collaborate on a project or something like that. And Tom could not be more just dismissive and disinterested in the whole thing. But Iggy comes off like a complete nervous fanboy during it.
Is it fiction or it's real?
Oh no, it's all acted. Like it's, oh, okay. It's supposed to be them, but it's scripted.
Oh, I see.
And, but it's just so beautifully strange that it would be great if that was just this whole thing was just some big fucking strange art project. Anyways, okay, jump into the next story.
Well, speaking of big strange art projects, there's a third wave ska band. They're called the Donald Trumpets, and they're Australian, and they're third wave ska, and they play anti Donald Trump songs. Adam White's friend, one of the guys that runs the Blink-155 podcast, did a funny tweet, and it basically, Adam, you can explain it.
Oh, yeah, all right. So So this was very amusing to me. So we posted this story about the Donald Trumpets or whatever they're called. And Josiah Hughes from well, he writes, I know him because he writes for Exclaim, but everyone else knows him because he's one half of the Blink 155 podcast. And so Josiah goes and he posted a screenshot of the Punk News article about the Donald Trumpets. And then without comment next to it, he posts a picture from an editorial that ran, I think, right after the election that, well, let me pull it up here in front of me, that said, and we heard this from everyone at the time of the election, it asked, will Donald Trump's America trigger a punk protest renaissance? And trying to make that argument that you hear whenever there's a Republican in power that you know, oh, this is going to be just like, you know, just like Reagan again, right? Where it's just going to spurn all of these bands, you know, from the angry left are going to crop up, and we're going to have this new fiery breed of rock and roll. And I mean, people said the same shit about Bush, but I don't know how much that actually happened. I mean, we had the Rock Against Bush comps and everything, but that doesn't quite have the same cultural cachet as, say, the Dead Kennedys or something. But in any case, he put these two things together. The, you know, will Trump's America trigger a punk protest renaissance? And then what is the punk protest renaissance? An Australian ska band with a pun. So that's what we got. John.
Adam?
This story came from you, I imagine.
It did. Actually, we were...
How did this story land in your lap?
This band is a band that nobody knew about, and they sent us an email that said, will you post our brand new single? And I just thought it was hilarious. I didn't think the music was that good, but I thought it was hilarious. and there's just something that's inherently funny about third wave ska, because the vast majority of it is so bad, you know? But they're so earnest about it, you know? The real reason I posted is because I thought it brings up an interesting point. Is they're striking out against Donald Trump, but they're doing it in such a goofy fashion they almost undercut their own message, because it's very hard to take a third wave ska band seriously in 2018. So are they achieving what they want to achieve by doing something like this, or is it just a silly... Oh, go ahead, Adam.
No. Here's where I'm gonna mind fuck you, John. Is that they are achieving their message, because the message of third wave ska, the mission of third wave ska, John, is making a good pun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Right? Like, their mission is not to fight the power. Their mission is to make a pun. Yeah, and that, they have indeed made a pun.
Yeah, you can't not forget this band name now. Like, Adam literally took what I was going to say, so I got nothing else.
Well, there you have it. I think it's funny. I'm all for goofy stuff. I mean, I wouldn't buy this record, but I think it's worth a ha-ha-ha post. And you know, the core message I think I agree with. Now, speaking of things that have core messages, that I'm right back.
I want a hip hop documentary about.
Did we lose him again?
No, I'm here.
John, you fell into your audio hole.
Yeah, my bad. So anyways, speaking of things that have a message that some people agree with, some people don't agree with, the Impact Fest, I'm sorry, was it called the Impact Fest here? The Impact Fest was a festival in Gothenburg, Sweden, and the idea behind it was that the only people allowed into the festival were women, trans people, and non-binary people. That is, no cis men were allowed in. They had the festival this summer, and a whole bunch of female bands played, and non-binary people played the festival. The Swedish ombudsman, which we don't really have that position here in the United States, looked into the situation, and they found that it violated gender discrimination laws, because it did indeed discriminate against the male gender. The ombudsman basically said that, yes, we think they violated laws, but we're not going to file sanctions against them or anything. We just think what they did was illegal, and we're going to leave it at that. The festival responded that they basically said, we're changing the world. We're going to keep doing what we're doing, and we find it sad that we're trying to create a safe space for women, and the state says we can't do it. One of the fundamental points of the festival was because women are assaulted at music festivals, so the idea here was to limit or erase assault on women at music festivals. A lot of people have a lot of different views on this. I've got a lot to say about this. I don't know if one of you two want to kick it off, or you want me to kick it off.
John, you go ahead for me. I mean, I don't know what I really don't know where to go about this, because I'm just not familiar with this whole thing. So,
well, I think it's interesting. I mean, honestly, like, if there was an all women music festival and men can get in, I wouldn't really care. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't really care. I mean, I would say, okay, that's fine. That doesn't really bother me. Of course, it was like, if it was Melvins and Off playing and the Dwarves and I couldn't get in, I might get bummed out at the women's festival. But it does, I think, one of the commenters stated this, and I think I agree with it, is he agreed with the central idea behind it, but the way they're going about it might be subject to perversion, if you will. And that is, if you can make a music festival that's only women and no men can come in, well, can you do one that's only men? Can you do one that's only gay men? Can you do one that's only black women or black men? You see, and before you know it, you're using, I guess, the issue of discrimination to create laws, which we built laws to defeat discrimination, you know, in the 60s and 50s and 70s. And I realize the United States is not Sweden, but the central idea is the same anywhere you go. And so, I mean, I applaud the idea here. And honestly, as an artistic statement, I think it's clever and interesting. But I think it'd be very dangerous to accept as a society that you can make a public event where only this gender can come in, only this race can come in. You know, I think that's ripe for abuse. Now, of course, in the United States, you can do private things, but of course, the definition of private and public is very nebulous. But I think that's generally a good rule. If it's a private thing, you can do pretty much whatever you want. But if it's a public thing, then you can't bar people based on race, religion, sex, gender, although sexual orientation, but actually sexual orientation is not clear in the United States yet, although it's becoming clear. Nationality, and I'm missing one of the other ones. And so I think it's an interesting idea, but I think the box, I think it's a can of worms being opened if people accepted that. That would do a lot more damage than good. I also don't agree with the idea that every single man is a dangerous guy, and that every single man is bad, and everybody that's not a man is good. I don't agree with that, and I don't think that's what they're saying here. But you know, it's I don't know. I just can't get behind that message. You see things on Twitter like men are garbage, or I hate men. Well, not I hate, you know, men are garbage. You know, men are trash. You know, and that's just not true. I know a lot of good men. I know some bad men. I know a lot of good women. I know a lot of bad women. And so. Anyways, the point is, I think it's an interesting art piece. I think it's a fundamentally good message that women shouldn't be assaulted at music festivals and women shouldn't be made to feel unsafe. But I don't think this way, if it was a long-term plan, is the way to go about it.
There is a music festival in Toronto that just had its second year, which is called Venus Fest, that I think has it doesn't have the exclusionary aspect of it, but I think it has a similar mission statement in that it's an explicitly feminist music festival that is booking acts that are either, you know, primarily female or you know, non-binary or trans acts or whatever, and you know, trying to use the festival as a way to give space and give attention to those acts that you know may not even get on the bill at your big traditional, you know, typically male dominated music festivals, and to, like, you know, address a lot of the issues of inequity and everything else that that are just inherent in the music world. But I'm not aware that Venus Fest has, you know, where they've gone and they've tried to say like, you know, you cannot attend this if you are a cis male. And I feel that I've been just, I haven't been, so I don't want to put, you know, I don't want to use them as too much of an example here, but I've got to imagine that the, because of the way that the festival is branded and talked about, they must have a much larger than normal female and non-binary attendance to it. And at the same time,
there was like 70 bands playing, like a lot of bands playing.
No, not just the bands. I mean, like the crowd. Like
no, I'm saying 70 bands suggests a very large crowd, is what I'm saying.
Right, right. But then also, by going, and I feel that, like, you know, if I was just a, you know, ignorant clod of a male that happened to be a fan of one of these bands, and I went to Venus Fest, that is what I have to expect. What I have to expect is just, you know, a wash in messaging that is trying to move the needle on these issues, that it's A, going to be a place where I'm going to maybe get a little bit educated, and B, if I am some disgusting concert pervert, probably either not the place I would go or not the place I would ever be able to get away with my shit. So I don't know if what the effect of saying that, you know, men can't come to this is. Like, I don't know if that helps educate anyone. But again, there's a cultural aspect here where, like, this is Sweden, so maybe things are a little bit different on the ground there than here. I don't want to cast too many dispersions about what they're doing, but I'm just, like, you know, looking at Venus Fest here, like, there is a way to do this type of thing without it turning around and becoming something where you're being claimed where you're being accused of discrimination yourself, right?
Well, I actually, that's a good point. I will add that, you know, I think we're more divided, this country at least is more divided than it has been in, I don't know, 40, 50 years, maybe more. And I don't think furthering that division is going to cure the problem. I think inclusion and education and not labeling an entire mass of people as being X, but rather going after or correcting the actual people that are bad is a way to solve it, not division, unification. But you know
what you're saying is, like, we just need an event that has no Americans.
I'm sorry, what's that, Adam?
We just need no Americans, like, regardless of gender or political stripe.
No, I think that's called, isn't that called Gross Rock?
All right, where are we going with this, John?
We're playing a song, you commie bastard. You play a song, Adam.
Oh, fuck, it's me.
I didn't realize Ricky was the second song. I thought Ricky was the first one, so I had Ricky go first. But now, so, anyways, Adam, go ahead and play a tune. We're running long, but we got some stories we gotta get to, so we're gonna slam through a few more and then get out of here, but we definitely have some more stuff we wanna cover. Adam, play a jam.
Oh, jeez. Okay, here, I'm gonna play a song. So this is a band from Montreal. They are called Pottery. They have a single out that is called Hank Williams. It is not a country song. So that is very confusing moniker for it. But anyways, they're kind of like a cool garage band. They got a nice dancey sound. Paul Jacobs, who I really like, who is has a great solo artist. He drums for these guys, and a lot of the Pottery guys play in Paul's solo bands. But in any case, here you go. This is Pottery. They're a new band. They're out of Montreal.
I love you.
And we're back, and that was Pottery. We're gonna hit the story every year, and every year we say the same thing, but we're gonna keep hitting it just because I feel like we should. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its 2019 inductees. The bands getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year are The Cure, Roxy Music, The Zombies, Radiohead, Stevie Nicks, Janet Jackson, and Def Leppard. The bands that did not get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are Rufus, LL Cool J, Rage Against the Machine, Devo, Kraftwerk, and the MC5. That's right. Def Leppard got in before MC5, Devo, Kraftwerk, and Todd Rundgren as well. Quick trivia fact. Adam White, do you know what connection Todd Rundgren has to punk specifically?
Oh, geez, you've asked me this before. What did he produce? He produced...
There you go. Bring it on home, Adam.
Fuck. I'm blanking. What did he produce?
New York Dolls' first album.
Yes. Okay, there we go.
So anyways, that's right. Def Leppard got in before MC5, Devo, and Kraftwerk, which, woo, that's tough to justify that one. You know what I mean? Like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame... Who gives a shit anymore? Not me. I mean, it's a cool thing to visit, but who cares? Ricky?
I mean, here's the thing. I'll kind of echo my comment in this story. I'm not as surprised that Def Leppard got in. They were just one of those big hair metal bands back in the 80s that probably sold millions of albums here and in the UK especially. I'll spare everyone my Rage Against the Machine thing because, you know what, like, they're not the priority. I get that. I still love them, but so I'll spare everyone on that. I think it's a fucking crime that the MC5 have not been in yet, because I mean, Kick Out the Jams. That's like that song was kind of the big one of the big starting points in like protopunk, and like they definitely deserve to get in more than anyone on this list.
Yeah, it's true. True.
And it seems like, I mean, I don't know. At the same time, like, I mean, they've been nominated a whole bunch of times, too. I wonder if it's just lack of awareness of who they are, which would suck if that was true. But, I mean, the people at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame have to know who the band is and how important they were. In terms of, I agree, Radiohead is boring, and you just stand there when you're, you know, at a show, apparently. Janet Jackson, rock and roll? I don't know. Zombies probably deserve it. Roxy Music, Cure, definitely deserve it. Stevie Nicks, sure. LL Cool J, rock? Devo, deserve it. Kraftwerk, there are some that definitely didn't deserve to get in this year. MC5 have been nominated a whole bunch of times and have not gotten in. It's really dumb, and that's how you know this thing's a fucking sham.
John, me and my people, we are gonna gather in the streets, and we are gonna march. We're gonna march on Cleveland, and if we're marching. Right at the front, someone on a mic is going to yell, "Are we not men?" And those of us in the crowd are going to yell back,
"We are Devo."
"Are we not men?" Devo. And we are just going to march, and we are going to. It's going to get weird, and I don't know what we're going to. It's actually going to happen when we get there because we're not a very confrontational people. But we will not be ignored, John.
I will say it is kind of heartbreaking that Casale wrote like an open letter to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame saying, "Please let us in. We really want to be in. You know, we're from that general area. We love the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We love rock and roll. We love the history of rock and roll. We pay tribute to the history of rock and roll throughout our career with covers. Please, please, please let us in." And they didn't, Adam. They didn't. I mean, what is it? It's quite clear that it's just, I don't know. I think it's could they select acts basically on what will bring them the most eyes and the most money. And, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I forget if it's for profit or not for profit, but even so, it's still a private company. So people are making money off of it. So It's lame. I was disappointed that no one commented on my smiling Robert Smith picture. No one commented on that. No one gets my genius, Adam.
No one gets your genius. Keep going.
Speaking of guys that are on a different level, Cannibal Corpse's guitarist that recently had an issue. Basically, last week, Cannibal Corpse Pat O'Brien was arrested in Florida. He knocked on somebody's door, ran in with a knife, pushed somebody to the ground, ran into the backyard, and hid in the backyard. Meanwhile, a house down the street was on fire and exploding because there was live ammunition inside. Well, as it turned out, that was Pat O'Brien's house. He was arrested. When the police came to arrest him, he ran at them with a knife, and the police tased him and took him to jail. Apparently, he was spouting a lot of crazy stuff during the time he, broke into the house and was flashing the knife around. So he was probably having either mental health issues or drug issues or both. His bond was set at $50,000, which he did make. Here's the point of this article, is a lot of people thought this was hilarious and crazy because the lead guitarist of Cannibal Corpse is doing very violent things, and every single Cannibal Corpse song is about a violent, horrific act. Ricky and Adam, have you guys listened to Cannibal Corpse, or have you ever listened to Cannibal Corpse?
I saw them live.
Their lyrics are extremely violent, almost to the point of comedy, which is kind of the point. They've got songs like Hammer Smashed Face or Skull Full of Maggots, that kind of stuff. Very violent lyrics. And so people thought this was hilarious that a death metal guitarist was doing something nearly as extreme as the music suggests. But is it the proper way? I mean, obviously this guy's got issues, and he almost certainly to some degree has mental health issues. We're all yucking it up. Is it wrong for us to yuck it up? Because when it really comes down to it, this is funny from a distance. But if you were involved in this, either as this guy or his family or the residents of the house that got ambushed, it's not funny at all.
I agree with that. It's definitely funny from a distance. But he's lucky he didn't get shot. He went at a cop with a knife. He's lucky he got tased. Are you kidding me?
True. And he's a big man. He's like 6'6". Yeah. He's a big man.
Yeah, I mean, a cop could have put a 9mm right in his chest. Ooh. Instead.
Ricky, with the gangster talk, 9mm right in his chest.
357. I don't know. Still, like, this is kind of a crazy story.
On the one hand, yeah, this guy either has a mental health problem or problems with addiction or something, so those things shouldn't be taken lightly, and it's definitely not something that you want to take lightly if you're one of the people that was potentially terrorized by this. On the other hand, I think it's very funny to read this whole story and then just to answer like, well, Florida, and just leave it at that.
That was funny.
I just think it's crazy that not only was the Cannibal Corpse guitarist breaking into people's house with a knife and charging at the cops, at the same time his house was exploding. Like, whew. Well, listen, speaking of guys that had a bad week, Peter Murphy was recently performing, I think it was in Sweden. Sweden, man. Yes, Stockholm, Sweden. He was performing in Stockholm, Sweden, and during the show, he was having some kind of sound problems. That is, the guy mixing the board wasn't doing a good enough job, or at least to Peter Murphy's taste or requirements. So during the night, he was throwing bottles at the sound man, and eventually he threw a glass bottle at the sound man, and no one's exactly sure, but most likely the glass bottle shattered and might have gotten on some of the audience, might have gotten on the sound guy. Basically, the Swedish promoter was very unhappy with that. He cut the show right there. Peter Murphy refused to leave. And so actually security wrestled Peter Murphy, took him outside and dropped him to the ground and basically handcuffed him outside. So basically, I don't know if this is a first. It might be a musician got forcefully ejected from his own show. I guess that probably happened to Gigi Allen too. Two things. Again, we have the issue: is this hilarious or is this kind of sad? Because Peter Murphy, of course, lead singer of Bauhaus, amazing musician, still amazing. He's written some of the greatest songs of all time, absolutely amazing. But he's never been a normal person. And as I always like to say, you when people create extremely amazing art, you can't hold them to the same standard as everybody else just because there's some link between being able to achieve great art and being a normal person. They usually don't go hand in hand. And when they do, that's an amazing – when someone that like does achieve amazing art is basically a normal person, that's rare. That's not the standard. That's rare. On the other hand, it's not cool. I mean, on the other hand, it's not cool to actually be like endangering people with flying glass because that really can blind people. That's not cool. But on the, again, on the other hand, you know, the sound man is doing a shitty job. And honestly, in Europe, sometimes sound men are known for doing shitty jobs to non-European. I mean, well, Peter Murphy's English. He lives in Turkey, but non-continental. Continental people, continental sound men, are sometimes known for doing shitty jobs on non-continental acts on purpose. So it can be very, very frustrating when you're the performer and the sound man is messing it up, especially when you're known for singing like Peter Murphy and the sound man is just doing a terrible job and making you sound bad. 99% of the people don't realize it's the sound man screwing up. They think it's the singer screwing up, which, of course, can be extremely frustrating for an artist. So, as with many things, I don't think this is a black and white issue. I think it's a very gray issue. Peter Murphy definitely shouldn't have thrown glass at somebody, but I don't – people are like, he deserved it. Yeah, you know, kick his ass. Yeah, it's like – I don't think I can agree with that because, A, Peter Murphy is not a normal guy. He's an amazing musician. He's not a normal guy. And also, you know, the sound man quite literally is messing with his art and his livelihood. So I think Peter Murphy overreacted, but I do have some sympathy for him. Adam, I always have sympathy for people no matter what. It seems I always have sympathy for people. Why? I'm like Mother Teresa.
You're not, but no, you're bedazzled by your star love of Peter Murphy here. Peter Murphy's a dick.
He is. I mean, he's not nice.
Okay. I don't know what the layout of this venue is exactly, but presumably the sound guy is opposite the stage at the back of the room, to which the crowd is in between. So if you're going to huck bottles off the stage at the sound man, you're basically launching bottles over the crowd to get there. And that seems like a dangerous thing. So if you are a promoter that owns this thing, I don't care how much of an artiste right, you're dealing with here, you can't have someone hucking bottles over the crowd, even if they are the performer. I don't know about this European sound guy stereotype or anything like that.
I didn't make that up. I mean, that's like a thing.
No, I'm not saying you did, but let's, you know, the sound guy he's just a schlub doing his job at the worst.
Like, no, at the
don't
worst,
throw
he's a dick
fucking bottles.
At the worst, he's a dick purposely trying to ruin the performance.
Okay, but then he wouldn't have his job for very long.
That's not true, Adam. I mean, like. Here's a great example. It's much more with female musicians. Talk to many female musicians because sound guys are almost always men for some reason. Female musicians are often frustrated with male sound men purposely messing it up just because they're dicks. And that's true.
All right. I'm not going to say that every sound man then is – I'll walk that back. I'm just saying that you don't throw fucking bottles at
them. Well, I agree with that.
I'm okay with him. I'm okay with him getting pulled out and roughed up. I'm cool.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't care like how much of an artiste you are. Once you start getting your fans and the people that paid to be there like in harm's way, that's when I stop making excuses for you. And obviously we don't know the full context of what happened here. I think that's a good call, John. And it's obviously black and white. But that's when, I mean, to throw something and just throw a fit because you think the guy's screwing up your show, I mean, just stop the show and just call him out, like, on the microphone. You don't have to throw glass over however many, you know, hundreds of people and risk hurting people. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Ricky, what if you threw a water bottle? Would that be all right?
How full is it?
Not full enough to hurt anybody, just full enough to annoy people.
No!
Stop! Don't throw stuff.
I think it's cool if bands throw stuff as long as it can't seriously hurt anybody. I think that'd be fair game.
He should have just stopped and be like, dude, and just called him out. Like, embarrassment works quite well. He just should have called the sound guy out, stopped the show, and just started yelling at him on the mic.
Yeah, well,
so okay,
but that one works.
Shame works, guys.
I don't think that would work. I think if Peter Murphy did that, and he'd be like, "The sound man's a dick. The sound man's a dick." I think the sound man wouldn't really do anything, and the crowd would just say, "Peter, stop talking and just play your music." I think that's what the real thing is. You just got to grit your teeth and muscle through it, and maybe take some shots at the sound. I mean, hindsight's 2020, and it's a lot easier to say what you would have done 5 weeks later. You know, when you're sitting at home drinking iced tea, not up on the stage feeling the squeeze. But I guess what. And you would think that Adam, I'm gonna let you speak in a minute. You would think that being a musician for 40 years now, he'd know how to handle a situation like that. But on the other hand, you know, like, everybody has a bad day. And when I have a bad day, it's not in front of 600 people. It's in front of 3 people or 4 people, you know. So he might have just been having a really bad day, and that's what happened. Now, he certainly wasn't right for throwing glass bottle, but sometimes people have bad days. I think it would have been awesome if you threw a water bottle that wouldn't hurt anybody. It's punk rock, and I think that's cool. Adam, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If you have made the decision to start throwing bottles over a crowd of people at another person that you have decided has wronged your performance, you are not just like of the moment angry, like you are making calculated, you know, intentful moves that you know you probably shouldn't be doing. Like you're past like the heat of the moment anger to, you know, really, really like willful dickery. So if you really wanted to make this work, because also at the point where you start throwing bottles, you should know that, you know, your show is over. If the promoter even lets you finish the show, you have big problems with them once that show is done, let alone the sound man. So since it's all fucked at that point anyways, what you do is you get all the crowd riled up about the fact that the sound sucks. You tell them that we're all going to march outside and you're going to fucking play acoustic for them in the parking lot because that's more real, man, right? And then you march everybody out there. You go with them. You play in the parking lot. You don't have to deal with the sound man anymore. You sound like some sort of folk hero then. You have done enough to screw the venue because they're not selling drinks or whatever anymore. And, you know, you still get your name in the paper for being some sort of hot-headed lunatic, but it's not because a cop had to, you know, pin you to the floor. That's what you do.
Well, I agree with that, and I would think if I was a musician with 40 years of experience, then I would have that in my back pocket and ready to go if I had to do that. But, you know, and you would think that he's had that experience before, but maybe he's just having a really bad day. Adam, that acoustic plan that you have, which is an excellent plan, do you know who I saw do that once?
Who did you see do that once?
Ezra Kiryev, Morning Glory, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
See?
And actually, go ahead.
I was just going to compliment myself for being a genius. Keep going.
Well, fair enough, Adam. I'll also say you're a very intelligent person. It was at the Blake Church in Santa Cruz, and the sound was all whacked out. And he was like, you know what? Just cut the sound. I'm just going to play acoustic. And it was real cool. It was real cool. We've been running long. I'm going to play a song. Let's see. I guess I'll do Lucille Bogan, Shave Him Dry, or should I do Bauhaus? I don't know. We'll find out. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we will see you next week.
I got nipples on my titties, big as the end of my thumb. I got something between my legs that'll make a dead man come. Oh, daddy, baby, won't you shave them dry?
No, no, no.
Want you to grind me, baby, grind me until I cry. Say I fucked all night and all the night before, baby, and I feel just like I want to fuck some more. Oh, great God, daddy, grind me, honey, and shave me dry. And when you hear me holler, baby, I want you to shave me dry. I got nipples on my titty, big as the end of my thumb. Daddy, you say that's the kind of woman you want, and you can make them come. Oh, daddy, shave me dry. And I give you something, baby, swear it'll make you cry. I'm gonna turn back my mattress and let you oil my springs. I want you to find me, daddy, till the bell do ring. Oh, daddy, want you to shave them dry. Oh, great God, daddy, if you can't shave them, baby, won't you try? Now, if fucking was a thing that would take me to heaven, I'd be fucking in the studio till the clock strike 11. Oh, daddy, daddy, shave them dry. I would fuck you, baby, honey, I'd make you cry. Now your nuts hang down like a damn bell clapper, and your dick stands up like a steeple. Your goddamn asshole stands open like a church door, and the crab walks in like people. Ow! Shucks! Woo! Baby won't shave them dry. A big sow gets fat from eating corn, and a pig gets fat from sucking. Really see this whore fat like I am. Great God, I got fat from fucking. Yee! Shave them dry.
Oh, brush. Don't brush it.
My back is made of whalebone, and my cock is made of brass, and my fucking is made for working men's $2. Red garden round to kiss my ass.